Hello and welcome to Faces of CI. My name is Aaliyah and we're sharing conversations in contact. Today we have Christy Simpson visiting us in Changdao in Thailand. Would you like to introduce yourself, where you're from, and a bit about your journey coming into how you discovered contact?
Yeah, okay. So my name is Christy, as we've said, and I am originally from England. I started, how I encountered contact was through meeting Steve Paxton at a Dartington Festival, which used to happen every year, which is in Devon in England. And I was 1 year out of college and had joined the Rosemary Butcher Dance Company, and we went down to the festival and Steve was teaching there. And I think I just took three classes that first time, but the classes had a profound effect on me. Second class, I had an experience in Steve's class where a kind of prior knowing or a voice from my body told me that everything I would ever need in this life was already inherently present within me. So that transformed my life instantly, from one of being really afraid of life and whether I'd be good enough and having to prove myself and all of that, to understanding that life was actually really about a process of discovery and discovering who one is in relation to the whole. So that one's unique voice as part of the whole meaning the whole of life, humanity, but also the whole of life and the mystery of life. So that's when I said to myself, okay, I'm an improviser. And at the end of those three days of festival, Steve said, okay, somebody has to teach this in over in Europe, because it was the first time he'd brought the work. It was about early 1980s, I think. And I was one of a very few of us that put my hand up, said I would do it. And so after three classes, I started teaching. And I had not a clue what I was doing. I was terrified. But somehow it was kind of perfect, because I had to find my own, you know what I mean, my own way. So what I would do was, I would, you know, we were invited to teach all over Europe, which was really amazing. And in a way it was amazing. It meant I was on the wave, the first wave. So I always got work, which was incredible. But I would teach, and then I would go to the States often and do a workshop or a couple of workshops, and then come back and then have a time of teaching and integrating. So it really worked out kind of superbly well.
And you listened to this revelation that you had and decided to continue it in the dance, which people might not have integrated that and actually gone with it. So
Yeah.
And we're here in Changdao at a residency. We're towards the end of it, the 3 weeks. And I just see these like themes that have been arising throughout the weeks that are very you and your work, and wanted to kind of share on the, for the first one I saw, which was coming from your performance, is this theme about air and flight, both in terms of this costume we wear with feathers, uh-huh. and then we've done a lot of things about expansion and the breath. And can you share a bit about how that's related to your work? Or,
well, one of the things, and I don't know how this has all developed, it's literally through in a way this kind of discovery and uncovering. I've just really decided, I really decided at that moment when I had that epiphany that I was going to trust my body and listen to my body and learn from my body. So I actually kind of stayed away from learning particulars about the body or learning the systems, or I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be really this thing of the unknown and then following what came. So one of the things was this coming to understand that a lot of the time we focus on gravity. So this force of grounding and going down. And I started to feel actually there is a tremendous force that is coming up from the earth, which is the expanding force of the universe, if you like. You know what I mean? And it's and I started to realize that grounding had to do with really the two forces working concurrently together. But I did kind of feel, and it's like when people get older, they start going down, they start giving into gravity. And I felt that no, actually there's a way that we need to ride the upward force, you know, we don't have to worry about the downward force. That's very strongly there. So it's this upward force. I actually trained as an Alexander teacher, So that's a lot to do with this expanding force in the carriage of the head. And so that has kind of led to me really, really focusing very much on flight and expansion. And, you know, because what I tend to see is the ways that we, it's almost like the way that we see is what we see is form. Do you know what I mean? But in that we kind of limit somehow. So what you see, you think is it. And actually I feel like what we see is not it at all. It's a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much more unknown, you know, which for me comes in that this expansion. It's mm-hmm. the not knowing, which is ever present. And that's really, for me, what I'm superbly interested in.
Yeah.
So that my growing is continuous, because it's about this unknown, exploring this unknown, as opposed to exploring the known, always having to know and explore the known. So, and that's why I think this whole thing has become central about this flight and this expansion and this, you know, which has to be grounded, you know what I mean? But funnily enough, honestly, in my case, it was not until I started to sense and feel the expansion that I really started to feel the groundedness.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise groundedness felt weird. It felt like down, you know, it felt like heavy.
Yeah.
And it's not, weight is not heavy. Weight is a kind of force also, you know, that is, so that's,
Yeah, and then speaking of this not knowing, that we did a lot of exercises with eyes closed as well, and that kind of supports this theme of what you're talking about, as well as how do we find support with eyes closed, so kind of sharing on those two, this theme of finding support going into this space of not knowing with our eyes closed has been really beautiful. Yeah.
Well, again, I think, it was this way of exploring that, you know, when you start going into the unknown, you actually have to find support. Because you don't know. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to actually really physically connect to this thing of support. And that then started to come in to the work. So as I got interested in the expanding force, then what was being called for was, okay, but we need support. And we need to know how to support each other so that we can experience, because what my hope is, when we do these eyes closed things, that people start to experience space. An expansion, you know, as part of their beings in a way, but they can't do it without this grounding of support. Otherwise, you know, you can kind of
float off.
That's right. You can kind of, and you have to be careful, you know, because I don't know what state people are in when they come to these workshops, and you have to be very careful the way you balance all these forces, really, because someone's in a very delicate state, and you start expanding, you know, they could really like lose it.
Yeah.
So these different things for me have been called for, and I've responded to those, and that's kind of how my teaching has developed. So it's not, you know, the beginning I was copying, you know, the form of contact and doing the bridges and the log rolling and the body surfing and all this stuff. But very soon I started to like become more interested in almost like, well, it is the unknown part of it, but also what's actually happening between you and I when we move together, this other thing that starts to occur to me. That was the amazing thing, not the particulars of what we were doing together physically, you know, like being able to bridge and da da da, but actually something else that I became aware of between us. That to me was like, not only was it glorious to experience, but I started to feel there was a potential for us as humans, do you know what I mean, to interact together and to live together in very different ways. And from the beginning, that really inspired me. You know, this sense of potential in a much bigger way than just in the dance. The dance led me and showed me and all of that, but I realized it had a lot more to do. For me, my interest was in then the bigger context of living on this planet together, not knowing how to do it. I realized humans don't have a clue, you know.
Yeah.
Plus, we've got a bit lost, as far as I'm concerned, but you know what I mean? So we need, you know, we don't have much help with how to live. Nobody really does it. You know, the parents don't, because they don't know. You know, so then finding it through these physical form, these intimations of, oh, wow, this could actually teach me how to be together with others in life, was really, like, inspiring. Mm. Really inspiring. So it became more than just a dance form that I practice, but it's I call it a life practice.
Yeah. I've seen some links to me between like spirituality and contact, and it's kind of this gray zone of how to deal with this conversation, because I went through my own thing in my mid-20s, and then when I found this dance form finally, it was like, oh, this really does bridge two worlds that I'm interested in, and it's hard to share. Finding this sense of
that. Sad thing it seems that we do as humans is we compartmentalize. Yeah. So there's this weird compartmentalization where you say this is spiritual work and this is this work and this is that work. Well, to me, we're spiritual beings. Mm. I mean, all you have to do is, you know, be beside someone when they die. Mm. And you just, or I'm sure when somebody's born, you know, I've not been present to their birth, but and you go like, what is going on here? Do you know what I mean? We are much more than we think we are. And it's essentially spiritual. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it really, but because we've compartmentalized and we've called this spiritual, then people have these kind of adverse reactions to these things, and I'm like, what's the point? You know, why not just investigate with a really open mind and find your own conclusions about all this, and not just react because of things that you've learned or things that have happened, and, you know, have the guts and have the it's not just guts, but it's like being explorers, you know, explorers of life. I mean, how exciting is that?
Yeah.
And not having to react and push away things and do this and do that, but find your own relationship to it all. And if you found a form that can help you do that, it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
There are not many forms that I've seen that really do that.
Yeah. It's opened up a lot in terms of the world of movement, but also beyond that.
Yeah.
I had written a post on is contact improvisation a spiritual practice, and I'd posted it on Facebook, and it got both a lot of people really excited and like inviting me to teach, and then other people being like, you're a hippie goddess in Bali, the opposite. So it was interesting it was just a short thing, but it was like a...
The reactions,
yeah, it was interesting. So... Yeah, even we had this theme around energy, and it felt like kind of almost like this art therapy day we did where we were drawing each other's portraits well. Yeah, yeah. So kind of where did that curiosity come from in sharing that? Well, I think you talked a bit about Anna Halperin process.
So inspired by her.
Yeah.
She's used that a lot. She did mostly, I think, self-portrait faces, you know, where you draw, has used that. I never actually studied that, interestingly, with her. So it wasn't that it came like that, but it just put it in the thought into my mind. And quite honestly, there is a very practical reason around that, because as I'm getting older, I need to find ways to bring a bit more spaciousness into my teaching. So my teaching can be quite intense, you know, also physically can be quite intense physically. And I just felt I needed to find ways that were connected, but that brought a little bit of space or time to integration time. And I just felt like, oh, this thing with the drawings could be a really nice way to kind of to support the work as a continuation of the work, but also give us a little bit of nice space. And it really works kind of like that, because it's a really beautiful thing. All these people just with their big pieces of paper on the floor and, you know, just moving to get the colors, and then, you know, and just seeing what people do, and everybody does it so differently, and it's just
very really supremely beautiful. Creative. We kind of laid down in different poses and traced the outlines of our bodies, and then kind of colored them in, and the amount of differentiation between them all was really beautiful to walk around and look at after. Very interesting piece to go from.
And I used to do it, so it was just a solo, you know, just you had your own piece and you did your thing. But I've actually started doing these duet forms, which are, so there's relationship with these two forms, and they create stories, and we have that, and it's really lovely. And there could be other things to develop from that in terms of taking that into moving or as a score for moving in the duets, which I haven't quite, you know, gotten there yet, but it might evolve into that.
Yeah. We've also had this theme around kind of storytelling, both like around the fire and in the work that we're doing. We're now doing these projects together, and we had your performance last week as well. So this theme of storytelling and how that's important through the dance to be able to share what, even like an alchemy of sorts from things that we've gone through in life to be able to put that into expression.
I think being here for these 3 weeks has actually pushed that aspect of my work, which I'm really happy about, because I've never really introduced it. I introduce it in my, when I teach, I use the stories of my life, which is something that has just evolved. Do you know what I mean? And I've gone with it. And that, and that what has seemed to have happened is when I share the stories of what I've been through and my own understandings from these stories, you know, that's why I tell them like stories, because they've allowed me to understand a lot of different aspects of things. When I've shared those, I've seen that people really respond. So there's a kind of, they're personal and yet they're not personal.
Yeah.
And that's been really, the first opening was like, wow. And then this time I've started to ask people to come up, you know, to start to understand their own stories and their life as these stories that are really important. So that people start to understand that it's really their life is their mining, their exploring of what life is. Instead of thinking that I've got to learn outside of myself about life, you know what I mean? You start to realize, oh, actually, it's happening through me. So I'm the laboratory.
Yep, the conduit.
Yeah. I'm the conduit. And so I've got to start looking, which automatically makes one start to respect one's own life more and take one's own life more seriously. And I've really enjoyed that. And I just introduced that. And then I was really amazed that people really kind of, somehow they really got something from that and responded to it in these different ways. And I'm very happy about that. You know, and I think that's something I want to really, I want to explore more so that people are mining. Yeah, and I think it can be very helpful. People can start to realize things about their own lives and all of that. And ultimately, you know, I heard some questions like, is this therapy? Is this, is this that? Ultimately, no, as far as I'm concerned. You know, ultimately, if you start understanding yourself more, also the way that you dance, the way that you are in life is going to have a much more kind of a presence. Do you know what I mean? Presence. You won't be thinking it's outside of yourself. You'll actually be carrying life as you dance, as you interact. You know, that kind of curiosity and all. And so that I'm excited about. And that's in a way, I'm not so interested in, you know, the technical aspects of how you dance. Of course, you have to do a bit of that. But it's more this other stuff, which is the multi-layers that can start to appear when someone's moving, which is so great.
Yeah.
And so interesting and fascinating and unique, really. You know, really unique.
Yeah, I'm interested in this like psychology that kind of blends even with contact and spirituality and this inner child playfulness, and they seem like these outer realms. And I teach skills as well, but it's not as I'm like, okay, I can, but
not as
resonant. So it's really nice to come here and see someone sharing more.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say what's outer, but not the narrow box of what contact improv is known as.
And I think it's because at the very beginning I got these intimations that this is something much more than just a dance form that you practice these technical things together. Much more than that. And that's what I've gone with, my teaching. To the extent that I sometimes question, am I teaching contact improvisation anymore? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the whole thing of touch, moving with touch, is really central.
Yeah, we've done a lot to do with like body work and scores, and there were some skills you were sharing as well as Aikido classes.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been the primary part of our time together. But it does feel like contact improvisation
same
time.
Actually, what's been quite nice here is also then there've been these open jams where people can integrate the material and also do the kind of dancing, because not necessarily in my classes you're going to get to necessarily do the kind of duet dancing that you want to do. So these times of jams have been very nice balance, I think. And then the Aikido for me is also, you know, we talked about that, is bringing in an understanding of like this form of where discipline comes in, where actually like embodying respect comes in, all these things that I shared that in my trajectory really was so important to me when I started studying Aikido, that they gave me a very clear ground of respect and ground of, you know, through a formal thing of actually embodying that, bowing to people before you work and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't do that in the dancing, but inside myself, interiorly, I've taken that in, and I do that, you know, when I dance with people.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I've taken Aikido a couple of times and it hasn't so much resonated, just kind of due to that. And I don't know if it's the authority thing or what, but this time I'm getting it, the integrity and respect and for the practice of what it is. And I'm seeing the translation into contact I wasn't before, but it's been really wonderful.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that.
We'll be back soon with our latest guest. For now, I wanted to share a dance game oracle deck, that's right, that I've created and invented called Fortune Score. So what is Fortune Score? It's a deck created for you to dig deeper into the practice of contact improv. And as a self-professed tarot and contact enthusiast, I blended the two to be used as an educational tool for facilitators and contact improv fans. This game has been played many times in Bali at jams, so much so that one of my students asked me to make it into a deck, and I have, and it's received a lot of positive reception. So it's effective to be played at a round robin, a festival, or a contact jam, or you can also pull cards as you would for an everyday oracle deck and take the theme with you as you would move through the world. This is a deck of scores. As you may or may not know, in improvised dance, we often use a dance score, which is the suggestion for you to keep in mind for yourself in the dance. Each card offers you a fortune, like you'd pull from a fortune cookie. And these are prompts I've gathered from a variety of places: mindfulness, 80 sci-fi books, teachers and trainings I've had, and a lot of them I've honestly just made up. So, a fun story behind the deck. For some history and context, Paxton held some of the first performances in contact improvisation in New York City, where they danced for 5 hours a day for a week at John Weber Gallery, and audiences were streaming in and out, seeing this performance of what would become contact improvisation. And in preparation, Steve went to Chinatown and had fortune cookies made with an invitation inside. Dancers went around handing the cookies to people on the streets of New York. And the fortune said, come to John Weber Gallery for contact improvisations. So this is my ode to that sense of humor, a tongue-in-cheek homage to the origins of CI. And it's my invitation for you to come and join the mystery of the dance. A limited run of decks have been printed. You can grab your deck of fortune score online. There's a link in the show notes to our Instagram at facesofci, and you'll find out where to buy them there. Grab yours today, and we're going to come back to our episode with our latest guest right about now. We're going to take a short break just to talk about some exciting new projects coming out. So we have Contact Body. This is a online contact improvisation course I've been working on for many months. It's based off of the beginner's workshop I've been teaching in Ubud. It's split into two segments. So solo body is all about solo improvisation. There's Bartini with fundamentals and floor work and somatic practices. And it's really about tuning inwards to your own body. And then two bodies is about learning contact improvisation partner work. So these are two courses that are completely self-paced and available to purchase online for you to learn from home. The beginning foundations about contact improv. So if that's something that's curious to you, the full details are on contactbody.ca because I'm Canadian. And you can learn all about that. And there's a promo video. And also please check us out at Faces of CI on Instagram for lots of inspiration and more about our interviewees. And now one quick word from our sponsor before we continue. I didn't know if you wanted to share as well. You spoke before about sensuality versus sexuality in the practice. I think that's something that can be important for listeners to kind of be aware of, just from your experience in 40 years and how you've seen that change
in yourself. Well, I mean, this again came from my own relationship to my own practice, was my own learning, really, because of abuse in my past. that this form gave me an amazing opportunity to reclaim my own body, which is taken from you when you're abused, really. However, I did realize in order to do that, do the work that I needed to do, I had to be in a safe space, and that which meant I had to be in a space where the whole sexual thing was not present, you know, and was not present. That actually we were really focused on the practice of the work and not any entanglement with the sexual motivation or stuff like that. And then I realized, okay, you know, I don't think I'm alone here. I think there's probably many people, you know, that have these issues in their lives, and therefore I need to be able to hold a space that is very safe, that is very clear around this area. And so I realized, yeah, I need to do a lot of a work around this, you know, for myself. And I think I shared this whole thing of after about 7 years of doing the work, I was literally infused by this tremendous sensuality that I could only connect with sexuality, because that's how I've been taught that sex is, you know, is very, very, very...
It's limited.
But there's a confusion around it. Especially in Western cultures. I'm not sure about other cultures, but I think there is in all cultures, actually. There's a tremendous confusion, which also confuses our relationship to body. So there's a lot of fear of body because of the sin of, you know, all of this confusion stuff, you know what I mean? And so I got very frightened at this point, and I thought, oh God, you know, I think I'm, because I was like an animal. I mean, I was just going crazy with this sensuality. I got very frightened. I thought, oh my God, you know, maybe I'm just a sex maniac, which always makes people laugh. But it was really, you know.
We become so attuned somatically. That's the only way to put it.
Yeah, like, yeah, in a way. Yeah. I know. Yeah. And then I said, okay, you know, I said I had made this commitment that I was going to follow my body. So I said, okay, if I pull back from here, I will never continue. So I've got to keep going, and then I can get help if I discover that I'm sex maniac. And so I did keep going, and then as often happens when you go through something, you find out what it is. And then I suddenly got this very clear thing that this thing was the force of life itself, is this tremendous sensual force that a lot of the times we hold ourselves back from because of the fear of the sexual, you know. And then I realized, wow, so you have to be incredibly clear. And it's not about not having sex or anything, but it's about understanding that if you make a decision to go down that road, that's what you're dealing with, you know. And it's wonderful to have sex and all that, but you are then dealing with everything that comes with that, which is personal. Often can get confusing. You're often, you know, dealing with all kinds of things. That's what you're choosing. So in my case, I felt like I actually want to find something deeper. I want to go with the sensuality of life and really find out what that is as a living human that is not diverting it all the time into the sexual realm, and really go there, you know, so that I can feel as alive as a human being as I do when I fall in love or when I have sex, because I think that's why people go there, because you feel so alive, you know, when that's going on in your life. But we can find that without necessarily having to rely on a connection with another person, you know. And that was exciting to me, and that's where I feel it's just about clarity of intention. What do you want? Making choices that support what it is that you want, being very clear that if you get involved with the sexual thing, that's what, you know, this is. And of course, that realm can cause a lot of suffering, and I don't care what people think they're up to, but that realm can cause a lot of suffering, so you have to be so aware of all of that.
Yeah, just sitting like clarity in the containers and in the classes and the jams and everything.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it really does bring us into a way of physicality and really having a relationship with our own bodies to really, really go into this practice. And often I'm a different person when I'm doing this regularly.
Yeah. And so, you can become an independent person, independent thinker, independent, you know what I mean? Dealing with these issues in a very independent kind of way, instead of being swept by the feelings, and do you know what I mean? Just swept away by the feeling, just going with the feelings, you know. I mean, that's lovely, but I question where it gets you in the end, unless you have this kind of independence within it all, where you really are clear. And it does not, again, and I'll say it again, it does not mean you don't have sex. Because people, we go one way or the other. It's like blah or blah. No. And to me, that's what I wanted. I wanted to become an independent human being who was responsible for life, who was responsible for myself and for others, you know, and did not want to harm as much as I possibly could, did not want to cause suffering for myself and for others as much as I could. That, to me, is what I've wanted. And I've sensed this form could help me find that, and then being able to fully open to this extraordinary thing called life, you know, and then through that start to figure out some stuff about it. It's like, whoa. You know, instead of taking for granted, realizing, wow, this is precious to be experiencing. And you know, it's coming to somewhere like Thailand, you really feel the power, you know, of the nature of in this place there's such a deep silence, you know, that we were in, that really, it's so supportive. Talk about supportive for a certain kind of work.
Unwinding and slowing down. This has been a thing whenever I've come here. It's a pace that you just have to take a couple of days to tune into, and then you're like, all right, this is allowing me to settle in more.
That's right.
To the experience of it. So.
Yeah.
And you had as well. The theme of the workshop is resiliency, and we talked before about your experience with having cancer and how that's brought you to perhaps a different, you were talking before about in dying there's two things to kind of live for. It was either you share again how maybe the dance supported you in going through your journey, like did contact support you in that? So
what it did was my experience of getting cancer, the way, you know, which I got at the very beginning of the pandemic. So when lockdown was just happening, I got news that I was, not only did I have breast cancer, I had the worst kind of breast cancer, which, you know, even a couple of weeks later, it could have been untreatable. I was very lucky it was caught before then, but that also I had this genetic condition that made me susceptible to breast and ovarian cancer, which has been passed down from my mother. So all of those things happened, which are potentially very devastating things. Plus, I was on my own because of lockdown and all to deal with it all. And it was extraordinary because I felt like, okay, I'm in an improvisation. So in improvising, you know, what we're learning to do is to accept what comes to us.
Yes.
And find the most intelligent ways to respond to what comes, you know. Not try and push things away, not try and avoid, but really face things as they come and then work with them. And this is what I did. And I did it, you know, all the way through figuring out what treatment I should have. You know, again, I was very lucky. I had a very good friend that got me the best doctors that I could work with. But I actually started to enjoy the process. Crazy. When you're facing a mortal thing like that, I started to enjoy, like, meeting the doctors, really, like, really using my powers of intuition and you know, just what we practice when we're together. Really knowing somebody else's mind, all this stuff, empathy. And I was using it all as I went through the whole process, so that I actually started to enjoy it. And then I had surgery and came through. My body was very strong in terms of recovery. I knew why, because of all these years of practicing. Yeah. The movement, the breath, all the rest of it, you know. And so it confirmed to me something I already knew about these practices, but it absolutely confirmed the power of the practices that we're, you know, that they also give us something that can serve us when we face difficult times, which we all will. Nobody can be exempt. You know, we're all going to get sick at some point. We're all going to die. We're all, you know, all of this stuff. So these practices can actually be tremendous support to help face that the more difficult aspects of life. And that was thrilling. And it's also given me a really like a greater confidence in the work that I do or we do, you know. So that was really exciting, you know.
Yeah.
And then in terms of the reason for living was, you know, with the cancer thing that they've kind of discovered that there are certain principles, if you like, that really can be helpful for somebody if they're going through cancer, to help them, to help give them a greater chance of survival. And one of them is to have a relationship with a higher power, which I think is fascinating. So in terms of the spiritual, it actually, you come to face mortality and something, you know, you actually have to come to terms with something in terms of life. So there's that. But the other one that was the big one for me was your reason for living. And for a lot of people, that has to do with the fact they have family and children and they want to see the children grow up and the future generations, and that gives them the reason. And I don't have that in my life. I don't have a partner. I don't have children. You know what I mean? I serve this work, really. This is the choice I've made in my life.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, God, what's my reason for living? I don't know. And then I got this very clear thing that my cancer, even though I have a genetic propensity, you know, to get cancer, something has to trigger it. So, for instance, my sister, who's 9 years older than me, has the same condition, but she never got cancer. So, I happen to have been living in the Midwest of America, where they spray the crops 2 or 4 times a year with heavy chemicals. And my intuitive thing was, it was that triggered my cancer. And so I felt this very clear thing that my disease is absolutely linked with the disease of the planet, the ailing, you know, the way that the planet is sickening because of what we're doing to it. It's the same thing as what had happened to my body. That, I suddenly went, is my reason to live. So I am going to give everything to survive, to survive, to heal myself completely as much as I possibly can. There are no guarantees ever. But I'm going to do that because it's in a way as a contribution, also my contribution to helping the planet, because we're not separate. And it has become in a way a central thing to my life too, that, you know, what really has to change here is the human race. Let's face it. You know, yes, we have to do everything in our power, you know, to heal the planet. But how do we do that? We have to heal ourselves. There's no way that we can, you know, just do it, just carry on as we are and think that we're going to heal the planet. We could use all kinds of amazing technologies to do all kinds of amazing things, but we will continue to, you know, destroy the planet, because that's something in us that we have to come to terms with. And it's coming, it's come about because of, we have been damaged ourselves, and so we continue to damage. So that, you know, this is partly why in my work there's a lot to do with this kind of healing process of healing, because I see it absolutely synonymous with healing the planet and the work that we now face as a human race. So, and that's also very exciting, that we're involved in practices, that it's not just a dance form, but we can be really involved in, you know, contributing.
Yeah, the reflection that will happen.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Yeah.
So final, sometimes I have a few different sentence stems. I'll just pull out the one that I like the most, just for timing wise. So if contact was a metaphor for life, what would it be?
Ooh, I mean, we've talked a lot of kind of about it.
I know.
I don't know if I can answer that exactly. I mean, I would go so far as saying, metaphor for life, I don't know if this is completely answering that particular specific question, but I'm sure you can relate to this, and everybody here can relate to this, discovering that I was somebody that learned through embodiment. And I happen to have a kind of sense that actually, as human creatures, we are all embodied learners. It's just that we've made this choice to put the mind on the throne and to let the body be subservient to it, which is insane. And this is part of the reason why we're in such trouble, you know. So the practice of contact has given me a way to fully embody, fully find my embodied creature. You know what I mean? And as such, do the healing that I've needed to do and will continue to need to do. And I feel, and it's not like everybody's going to be doing contact improvisation, but I think it opens up a real thing in terms of what, as humans, we need to do going forward. We really do need to find this. We need to come to terms with our embodied animal.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have some ideas that we're very advanced creatures. We are in a certain kind of way, but you only have to look at the mess that the human world is in. And you go, we're not as advanced as we think we are. In the areas of sexuality, look at all the abuse that's, you know, come out. Look at it all. And that's, you know, because we don't know how. We have not yet evolved enough to take responsibility for these powerful forces that work through us. So actually doing that work through our bodies, I think, is a huge contribution. And I think it's something that has to start to happen, you know, with the race.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, with this now, when you hear about climate change, you hear about people talking in these most amazing ways, but most of it is written, okay? Most of it is cerebral. Where are the practices where you embody those ideas? They have to be embodied. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it's going to change otherwise. It's not going to change. So contact improvisation has been for me, and I think has been for many, an amazing, amazing way.
Yeah.
To come into that embodied state and do our learning. Start to do our learning, start to take responsibility for what we are as humans and our destructive side through this form, which is a lot to do with compassion, coming together with others, you know, and yeah.
Yeah, you shift into the body and it ends up shifting the mind. We think it's the other way around, but it's like you get in and that's changed my mindset. It's the opposite. Yeah.
I don't know how else real change can happen. I actually don't. It does not happen by just going to the psychologist and talking.
No,
I don't think it does.
No, I've learned this from therapy. It's like you need both, ideally, but like half of it was missing for me until I went out and changed things myself in my life and in my body. Yeah. And then the rest came into place, really. So.
Yeah. And when you think about what most people's body practices are, it's all about, you know, you go to the gym, even yoga. I mean, yoga that was traditionally in India, it had everything to do with what we're talking about. But it has become body beautiful, you know, a lot. Mm. How to look absolutely stunning in your one piece, whatever, and be as flexible as you know, all of this stuff. And it's not going to cut it. It's taking us more down those roads.
Mm.
It's doing something terrible to our bodies, really. Instead of letting the bodies themselves, you know, tell us and show us and speak and...
The production of the body versus the allowing the body.
Exactly. and allowing our bodies to be part of nature. You look at a tree, all trees are different. They're all different forms and, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to kind of force our bodies into these, like, ideas we have of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
It's horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
And people suffer. God, you talk to a lot of women. You talk to many, you know, most of us have had issues around body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all been imposed on us by these ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So let's find other ways, you know, to come into our bodies, where we let the body really celebrate the intelligence that it is, this connected intelligence to all of life. You know?
Well, I'd really like to thank you for coming on, and for the last few weeks have been really revelatory for not only myself but many others that have been here. Where can people find out about you or about your future workshops coming up?
Well, I have a website, which is kirstysimpson.com. So that, you know, they could look on there. I try to remember to update the, you know, they can find on there kind of where I'm going to be and all of that. Mostly I'm in Europe. I'm not doing so much of the long haul stuff.
This is an exception. Thank you for coming to Thailand.
Yeah. Well, I have also a second thing. It's because my brother lives in Thailand. So.
Okay. Well,
go. So I'm able to go see him, which is really wonderful. And it is wonderful to come and be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Thank you once more to Kirsty. Such a beautiful share. I wanted to share a few more things before we close out that episode. One of them is a film that was made during the residency. I impromptu directed a short dance film that just happened to occur into being. It's called There's a Thread That Runs Through Everything. And Kirsty one day was asking us to basically find our own mantra from going out into nature and just communing in the world and seeing what comes to you. And one day we had a field trip out to a local village and to see how rice was harvested and processed and made by the local families. And I took a break to just depart from the group and to have my own wander through the back orchards behind the family's base. And I looked up and I could see these kind of haphazard power lines that were running through the trees. Didn't make sense. It probably shouldn't have been a very safe thing to be having up there. And the mantra just came to me that there is a thread that runs through everything. And for me, that means several things. It means, one, believing in such a thing as synchronicities of almost the law of karma, like what goes around comes around. And, you know, seeing the patterns when things do come back around in your life, whether that's relationships or friendships or jobs, opportunities, symbols, things that are meaningful to you. So now whenever I have these moments of synchronicities happen in my life, I can say there's a thread that runs through everything. And a further aside, I have a history of being involved in fashion prior to my contact career. I have a degree in fashion design and owned a vintage clothing shop for about 9 years in Canada. So family was all sewers in different capacities, so the thread theme runs through everything. And that was the first inspiration for the film, and the second was this space that a friend showed me that was a semi-abandoned almost hangar with a small temple and some trees outside. He told me it was his meditation spot, and we had a couple weekends off. The quasi weekends off, there'd always be some performances and jams happening, but it was our time free, and I decided to take it upon myself to just do a short call out in our group chat. And I had five or six wonderful women come and join me, and we just basically improvised. They improvised, and two of us just shot on our phones and threw together a film. The next day, I didn't know this was part of the plan, but Kirsty announced that we were going to be doing group projects, and I said, oh, I already did it yesterday. So I spent the week editing instead and put it together. It's about 7 minutes long. The third inspiration was a good friend's poem. Kirsty asked us to share reflection on and kind of do a journaling exercise around what are energy givers and energy takers. And my friend Geraldine's poem was, she read it aloud to a small group of us, and we were like, wow, this is a manifesto for women, like really on the things that drain us and the things that are nourishing. And so just to be able to hear her voice, she was in the very first film I directed as well called Mangosteen, which was also super inspired by her. She came up to me and gave me a mangosteen. You probably heard this in other episodes, in the episode with Geraldine already, but yeah, to come back and be able to use her voice and to have her in the film was super lovely thread that runs through everything moment for me to have that. So that's going to be available online. You can look at Faces of CI to check that out. And just a final note to wrap up and share about a few workshops upcoming in Bali. I will be teaching Momentum this month, February 16th and 17th in Uluwatu in Bali. I've been living there for about 7 or 8 months off and on, and I'm really just trying to make the contact scene work there. There's been ongoing in Ubud for a long time, but I love me living by a quieter ocean town, to be honest. So anyways, beginners workshop 16th and 17th of February this month, and then February 20th 24th to 26th is intermediate. So that's gravity. Gravity is run about 2 times in Bali. Momentum, I think this is the 15th round of it. So if you'd like to find out more about those, check out at Faces of CI on Instagram, and there'll be the link to that. And more workshops coming up in the upcoming months. I will also share that I am teaching at Bali Bloom Festival, which is happening April 6th to 8th. And I do have a discount code for $25 off. So if you want to make it to that festival, it's a festival of about 80 workshops. I think there's 300 or 400 people go. It's Bali's biggest festival and a lot of fun last year. I will be hosting a jam class at Bali Bloom. So reach out on Instagram for a discount code and have fun dancing. All the best. Until next time.